The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this International Criminal Court story, and I know that you guys had a more lengthy discussion about it yesterday, but I'm sort of going to throw a few snippets of thoughts in
without it
becoming a major topic of discussion, but just here and there. I mean, I know why we need an International Criminal Court. I get that, you know, there needs to be some sort of an overall authority in the world, as it were, to hold people to account. And we as Jews know probably more than anybody else what the nature of genocide is and why it would be an idea, why it's a good idea to have some sort of an overall international authority which judges people who commit acts of genocide or war crimes or whatever it is. And there certainly have been some open and shut cases. You know, we think about Rwanda and we think about Liberia and we think about, you know, the former Yugoslavia. We think about events in the world which seem to us, at least, where from where we sit, to be relatively clear-cut cases. The problem, of course, is that when you start deciding that building a house on somebody's land is a war crime, then one wonders what sort of political motivation comes into this discussion. And, I mean, the thought went through my mind as to whether the acts in 1947, where the Arab world rejected Palestine partition plan that was presented to the United Nations, could that be a war crime? I mean, what they did was they rejected an idea that was put forward for a peaceful resolution to a situation and then decided instead to try to destroy Israel through a war rather than to accept a peace plan. So my question today is, you know, does that amount to a war crime? And why are things like that, those kind of actions, not potentially also considered within the International Criminal Court? You know, that's just my my thought for the day. We're going to talk a little bit more as well, perhaps, about the characters, Fatou Bensouda particularly, who's not going to be there when the case eventually comes, if it does, because she's completing her term in office as the prosecutor. But yeah, I mean, just there are so many thoughts that go through my mind on this matter.
Yeah, because the problem is it becomes about policy and it becomes about ideology and actually not about criminality, because then what happens is the criminal courts get used as a tool to further someone's political gains, and not about and of course, whatever they focus on, there's a limited amount you can focus on. So if you're focusing on the construction of homes, that means you're not focusing. There's something else that you're not focusing on. Maybe
yeah, like China, for example.
Exactly. Maybe it's about what's going on in China.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Fatou Bensouda comes from the Gambia and she was appointed as a so-called apolitical figure to try to strengthen the position of Africa at the International Criminal Court. And she came from a country that doesn't really have a political agenda. And yet she seems to really have pursued a political agenda quite single-mindedly on this Israeli topic, at least, you know, from the position that I take.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about some of the other conversations. Prime Minister Netanyahu was required to attend court yesterday in the final pre-trial hearing of his corruption case in Jerusalem. What were the main events from yesterday's hearing?
So, of course, the Prime Minister has done whatever he can to try to avoid actually physically appearing in court, but yesterday he was unable to avoid it because the court decided that he needed to be there, and he actually was forced to answer the charge of corruption that was leveled against him, which he formally denied, and he confirmed that the position that had been presented by his lawyers was the position that he also agreed with, so he confirmed that. And there was a lot of technical discussion about the timing, about various witnesses, about you know, how things should be done, about whether evidence was collected in a legal fashion, the involvement of the Attorney General and whether he should have been involved a little more in approving certain actions that were carried out by the police against a sitting Prime Minister in investigating these cases. Also, a lot of discussion about which case should be held first, because there's not only one case involved, there are actually three cases, two of which involve only fraud and breach of public trust, and the third one, which also includes bribery. and the prosecution are quite keen to bring the strongest case first, which is the one that also involves bribery. The defense tried to argue against that. So there was quite a lot of technical discussion backwards and forwards. The elephant in the room was the upcoming election. Nobody wanted to use the word election, but clearly a lot of the timetables that were being discussed about when witnesses can be brought forward and how long people need to take in order to review various documents between now and the next hearings, all of those discussions seem to have been very much driven by the date of the next election on March the 23rd. With nobody actually wanting to say, you know, we do not want to influence the outcome of that election by taking one action or another. And so that definitely was the elephant in the room on this particular occasion. The outcome of all of this seems to be that even though the court is not talking specifically about the election and did not mention it as an issue, the court seems to be quite determined to defer any witnesses being called or anything like that until after the election, even though the court, on the one hand, doesn't wish to be seen to be treating one citizen of Israel in a different way from any other citizens. In other words, to consider their personal issues and to be driven by timetables which are not determined by the court, on the one hand. On the other hand, I don't think the court wants to be accused in any way of having a hand in what the outcome of the next election might be, either one way or the other. I mean, this particular hearing could certainly influence people's general feeling about the prime minister, and they could, it could influence the way that they vote in the next election. And so I don't think that the court wants to stand accused of meddling in any way with the next election. So from what I can gather, even though the court didn't want to say it in so many words, it seems to me that the witnesses will not be called now before the next election. They need 6 weeks to review one document, and then they need another 6 weeks after that to review something else. And miraculously, that somehow takes you to a date beyond the next election. That's how the whole thing kind of panned out yesterday. So that really was that for the prime minister. He was allowed to leave the hearing a little bit earlier than some of the others who are also accused in this case. He was given special permission to leave after a few hours that he had attended, and he had to go about the rest of his state business. But this is exactly the issue. This seems to be a real conflict that we have between somebody who, on the one hand, needs to answer a criminal charge, and on the other hand, who is acting in his position as head of state, as a prime minister, and he has different conflicting issues that take up his time. And so this is going to be an interesting case all the way around. Unfortunately, also members of the prime minister's family have been dragged into this, discussions about Yair Netanyahu, whether he might have been involved in passing on gifts, whether Sarah was involved in receiving and demanding and passing gifts on from various people. This is going to be very, very complex. And unfortunately, I don't think that anybody's going to come out of this looking good at all. So that was just the opening shot of this case. There will be a lot more yet coming out of this.
We're certainly going to be hearing more. This is such an interesting story. Greece has requested to participate in a trial to test an Israeli-developed treatment against COVID-19. What details do we have? Because on Sunday I chatted to Dr. Anton Meiberg about this, and details were very, very scant.
So there have been reports in our newspapers involving the special treatment that has been developed by the Ichilov Hospital in Tel Aviv, as they've undertaken a phase one trial with 30 people, 30 COVID-19 patients, seriously ill patients, who have been given the special mix, which is called ExoCD24. Very, very technical scientific name. That's the name that's been given at the moment. But it's a treatment which apparently is based on CD24 enriched exosomes and is meant to fight the cytokine storm that is associated with many of the world's COVID-19 deaths. And so this is a very, very specific treatment that's been developed at Ichilov Hospital. 30 patients, who were considered to be either moderate to severe sufferers of COVID-19 were given the treatment. All 30 of them recovered. 29 of them, we understand, were released from hospital within 3 to 5 days, with the 30th patient also recovering, although it took him or her a little bit longer to recover. So it seems as if, though, at the phase one stage, which seems to be very, very limited from a statistical sample point of view, that has been very, very successful. And yesterday, the Prime Minister of Greece met with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Jerusalem, and the Prime Minister of Greece specifically requested to allow Greek hospitals to take part in this treatment. And this was, of course, Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, who happened to be in Jerusalem yesterday for a meeting on various subjects that involve Israel and Greece on the international front. One of the things, by the way, that Israel and Greece are looking to cooperate with is the movement of people between the two countries who've actually been vaccinated using the so-called green card that Israelis who've been vaccinated will receive, to allow them, at least for the next 6 months after the second vaccine has been administered, to move a little bit more freely and to do things that other people perhaps would not be able to do. So, for example, there is the idea that people will travel, lift travel restrictions and quarantine restrictions between Israeli tourists and Greek tourists to try somehow to get the economy moving a little bit more. But obviously the idea of testing this particular drug was very, very attractive to the Greek Prime Minister, and he's going to take that back to his hospital. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of this treatment, and I'm a little bit skeptical to jump to conclusions and to raise flags from the rooftops. Yeah. But it does seem to be something that's quite positive and encouraging.
Well, I do take Ichilov Hospital seriously, but, you know, Anthony, you and I have spoken about it so many times. As much as I might be a supporter of Israel, I find it particularly annoying that they come out with these massive statements from time to time. Israel's curing cancer, Israel's curing this, you know, within 1 year we're gonna, and it doesn't, and most of them don't actually transpire or become something. Now, they are doing incredible work. There is phenomenal work happening. I just wish they would go light on the announcements, you know, under-promise and over-deliver rather than the other way around. So I am skeptical around it just because, A, there's not much information, and B, we've seen so many of these announcements happening over and over again. It's made me very, very doubtful and skeptical about these big announcements that come out of the medical fraternity in Israel.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's no doubt there's a lot of amazing done in the medical field in Israel, and I do agree that sometimes these announcements are a little bit too much too soon. This one seems, I mean, when I first read it and I thought, well, 29 recovery success stories out of 30 almost sounds like the international recovery rate for COVID-19, when we consider that something like 2 to 3% of those people are inflicted,
but not people who are that ill,
and that 97 to 98% of the people actually do recover. So one person out of 30 sounds more or less to be the same statistical relevance. But then when you look a little bit more, first of all, that 30th person did recover, and secondly, these were 30 people who were not just inflicted with the virus, but who was moderate to severely ill, already hospitalized. And of course, the number of people surviving under those circumstances in that particular sample is a much lower number than is the 2 to 3% survival rate that we're currently quoting for people who've just generally been infected with the virus. So it sounds encouraging, and the Greeks are very, very happy to take this to their hospitals, amongst a few other things that were discussed between Israel and Greece. But I think we're going to watch this one carefully. I think it's been adopted in a second Israeli hospital over the last few days. And we certainly, if it's going to be very successful, you and I will get to hear a lot about it.
Absolutely, certainly. And then we will absolutely keep talking about that. No question about that. It is just about to go 8 o'clock. Unfortunately, this is where we love and leave you. Anthony, we'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place. That is Anthony Reich with the Israel Report.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.